All right, it looks like we're pretty well gathered. So thanks everybody for being here. Someone wants to catch the back door, that would be great. All right, welcome to summer. Right, we're officially hitting summer. We're post Memorial Day, and we are hitting the summer 9 a.m. series. For those of you who don't know me, though I think everybody does, I am Tim Corshane. I'm just one of the members here. And I have the great honor of kicking off the summer learning series. And over the 9 a.m. class for the next several months, we're going to be talking about Jesus's I am statements, the I ams, all right? And we're going to be focusing mostly in this third category of his figurative or analogy I ams, all right? So I've kind of got the easy part and the hard part for this series is I got the kickoff. I get to take all of it and condense it down into a single kind of overview message, give you the roadmap of where we're going, and give you some of the big ideas, the fountainheads ideas as to where these I am statements are coming from, kind of what's their background. So I get to take a lot of information and make it into a little 50-minute talk. But I also don't have to go as deep as the guys in the following weeks, so I've got that blessing. But what I wanted to start with, before we jump into the text, is I need three volunteers for passages. We're going to read three passages today, so hands up. All right, I see three in a nice row, too. It's just aesthetic. So, Jenny, I'm going to need you to be Exodus 3. So Exodus 3, 1 through 14. So all the way through 14. We really need 14 on that. Will, you are next. I need you to do. John, wait, where's my pencils? All right, John 48 through 59. And then.
What chapter?
Oh, sorry. 8, chapter 8, 48 through 59. Will, that's you. And then can someone do John 1, 1 through 18? All right. So those are the assignments. When I call on you, be ready. All right. So the first thing I want to open this up with is there are a number of great I am statements. The overview of that is God's name, I am. We'll get into that with Exodus 3. But one of the ways that I kind of structurally or thematically looked at these I am statements is it's about identity, right? This is God's identity. He's declaring it, and we will connect all that through this series back to Jesus. But the first thing I want to start with as we think about this subject is identity. So I was going back and I was trying to think of some fun identity things. And I think there's a lot of fun pieces of identity tied up in historical eponyms. Who knows what an eponym is? It's the name that comes after the name, right? So like William the Conqueror, what did he do? He conquered, right? Catherine the Great. What did she do? Or what was she? Great to Russians. Maybe not to everybody. Peter, the Great, right? These are names that indicate an identity. We see them in the sovereigns a lot. There's also some not so flattering identifying historical eponyms. There's a really cool Charles the Hammer, Charles Martel, defeater of the Muslims at Tours, father of another really cool Charles, Charlemagne, Charles the Great. There's some not so flattering Charleses. Does anybody know the not flattering Charles eponyms? I know one of them somewhat personally. Charles the Bald was the king of France. There's a Charles the Fat. Not great. I think we can guess what he looked like. There is, and these are the French kings, which for a line that had, Louis XIV, the Sun King, right? Charlemagne, Charles the Great. They've got some bad eponyms. There was Pepin the Short. And that's how we know them through history. These are their identifiers. These are their names, right? So we can kind of, we can think about this, and we all have our own names, right, that were given to us that we identify with. When somebody says Tim, I reflexively turn around. Now, it might be Big Tim, Tim Zeitzel. only with him am I a small Tim. But you reflexively turn around. Like, that is who you are. That's who you imagine yourself to be. That is what you respond to right away. And some of us have great stories with our names. I think one of the fun things with, like, especially English last names, since I don't speak German or French, my own last name, is you kind of know where that came from. A Smith was a Smith. Cooper made barrels. Fletcher made arrows, right? And you can even see kind of the distinction amongst classes through names, right? They have an English last name, Anglo-Saxon last name, probably of a lower class. If they had a French last name, they were probably of the Norman ruling class. But you can track all of this through names. It's very important for identity. But who gave you your name?
Mother.
Mother.
Yeah.
Father. Parents. Maybe ancestors earned it long ago. Especially with a title. Who gives God his name? Are any of us so bold as to give God a name? Who wants to be that person? Good. You've already got a solid understanding of where this is going, right? We don't give God a name, and this also distinguishes God, I think, as we read through Exodus 3, as we go through the Old Testament I ams, Jesus' absolutes that connect him to it, and his figurative I ams. This is a point of distinction from most other, not all other, belief systems. Who gave the Greek gods their names? Men. Who gave the Norse gods their names? Men. Who gave the Hindu gods, Shiva and Vishnu, their names? Men. They were not self-evident. Even if you go back, or self-existent, even if you go back in those myths, that mythology, there's no just existing. They all came from something. Their names came from something. Only here, with our God, the one true God, do we have an identity that is not defined by man. Not defined by us, defined only by him. So I think that's one of the things when we talk about the I ams, this is a declaration of identity. But it's an identity that can only be defined by the person with the authority and the power to do it. And that is the Godhead. So as we go through these, as we go through this series over the summer, look at the I am statements as declarations of God's identity and what it says about his identity. You'll see different things, especially when we hit each week on a figurative I am, right? I am a door. Well, okay, Jesus wasn't actually a door personally. He was a person. I am the light. I am the way. I'm a variety of these figurative things. I'm a true vine. Jesus wasn't a grape, but it tells you something about his identity. All right, so to kick it off, Jenny, with Exodus 3, would you please go ahead and read Exodus 3, 1 through 14?
Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came into Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses, and he said, Here I am. Then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, but I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you.
Thank you, Jenny. All right, that was a bit of a long passage to culminate in a declaration. So I want to point out a couple things, first on context for this passage, because this is the fountainhead, right? Flashing light signposts, flashing lights. All right, this is where it all comes from. Everything we're going to talk about in this series, everything we're going to talk about with Jesus' declarations, Jesus is tied to his father's identity, Jesus is tied to his powers and who he is, right there. Comes from right there. So we have to understand this passage and what God is doing and saying about himself to his people in order to understand what comes next and to understand Jesus' claims to authority, to his rightful authority later on. So the context here is, right, we had Genesis. We had God, who now names himself, but before had not named himself. He was defined by his relationship with the forefathers of Moses, with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? He wrestled in the wilderness, spoke with them, he blessed them, he made Abraham a father of many nations. We're seeing that now as we hit Exodus culminate to a degree, at least its first culmination, with the multitude of people under Pharaoh's bad, not good, oppressive, wicked rule in Egypt. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them, now have sprung from Abraham and the covenant and are now a people. But God has yet to name himself. And it happens here. And you can understand Moses' question. Moses recognizes he's God. He does all the things, right? He stops. He looks at the bush. He sees the power of God. One, because the bush isn't burning. Two, he hears God's voice, as all true prophets do. Prophets are called by God. When you go through the Old Testament, they are called by name, by God. Here, God calls him Moses. Calls his name, calls him to serve the Lord, and shows himself and reveals himself. Moses takes off his sandals. Moses responds. Moses also doesn't particularly want the mission, says, who am I when faced with this great authority? I think he correctly understands who is he as a creature to bear the authority, or to maybe not bear, but to hold and use what is the authority given to him by God. And then Moses, I think in an extremely humble and correct frame of heart, doesn't tell God, doesn't come up with the name of God, doesn't say Jacob's God, or Isaac's God or Abraham's God. He asks God, what then should we call you? Right? Moses understands his relationship with God there. Moses is the creature. God is the creator. The creature here, all of us, cannot define or give identity to the creator, the sovereign, the one with the power. We'll come back to that for application points, so what it means for our own identity. But that's just the dynamic. That's how it works, right? My children, I give, me and my wife, Anne, mostly Anne, but together, gave our children, right, like our blessed creations from God, but we had quite a hand in it, gave them their names. It wasn't the other way around. Sure, legally people can change their names, whatever. It's a crazy time. But at root, we gave them their names. And you know, you can look at the exceptions. It's a sad state, right? There are children who are born and their parents aren't there. Nobody's there to give them a name. Is that normal? Is that the correct course? I think everyone would say no. Your parents give you your name. It is a sad state of affairs when that is not present. But that's not the norm. Sure, it can happen. That's not what is right. Here, God identifies his own name. Also, an important thing to see here. I am who I am. Not I was. Not I am going to be. I'm not great at grammar, even though I write a lot. But like, I know there's some past participles and other forms of tense. But this isn't past, nor is it future. He's not a divine clockmaker who made the world and went away. Nor is he something ethereal or ephemeral that may come to pass in the future. He is here and he is now, and he has always been here and he has always been now. You'll see that repeated with a really interesting play on the tense when Jesus says it in John. Okay, so I am who I am. Present? Present. Track that. Foreshadowing for when Jesus gives the same absolute. All right? So that statement, I am who I am, nothing made me, is what God's saying. Nothing can make me, and nothing can name me. It is God's self-existent identity. Right? And then we know what happens. We know the story. We did Exodus a couple years ago. Felt like it took a couple years. But we did it a couple years ago as a church, right? And then everything happens. The Prince of Egypt movie happens. Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston happens. Right? We go through that. Some great songs. Prince of Egypt, always a big fan. We were actually watching that with Jane. Funny aside. I think the scene in The Prince of Egypt is pretty good. Bush is burning. It's not burning that up. They get the lines pretty well right. Takes off his sandals. Jane starts bawling. 3-year-old Jane. As soon as Moses goes into the cave where the bush is. I was like, Jane, you've watched this 1,000 times. I don't know why you're crying right now. This isn't even like a scary part. There's scarier parts and you don't even cry. Why she was crying was not because of the awe of the moment in the movie. It's because there was a little goat that went off on a side cave, and she was really worried about who's going to go find the little goat. Spoiler alert, Moses finds the little goat. It's fine. But that was our Prince of Egypt experience, so that pulled me out of the movie for a little while. But we know what happens. God's power is revealed. His people are saved. He does the things that only a true God of power can do. And that's Exodus. But this isn't just the one time it happens. Fast forward to Isaiah. And you'll see this on your notes. There are repeating Old Testament I ams. Why is Isaiah a really important place for this to be a repeating place of I ams and identity. It's the big thing about Isaiah. Somebody knows. Somebody knows why Isaiah is important. I'm going to sit here.
It's all pointing towards Christ.
It is. It is all pointing to
Christ.
I can't hear you.
Christ.
I can't hear you. You got to say it louder.
Christ.
There you go. All right. It is all pointing towards Christ. Isaiah is foreshadowing Christ. That is the connection. Right? So you see a number of these statements. And I cut these short from the I ams in Isaiah. Right? I, the Lord, the first, and with the last, I am he. The I am he, usually the he gets added in translation, right, to make it grammatically make sense, though I think that might be a problem, especially when we look at the Greek. But it tracks the statements, right? I am he. The Lord God is saying that through his prophet Isaiah. Those are the words of the Lord. They're not the words of the prophet. They're not the words of the man. They're the word of the Lord through the prophet. He is declaring and stating. Isaiah 43:10. That you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. That is one of the clearest background to Jesus' statements in John 8. That's why he's making these declarations. I am he who blots out your transgressions. We have a future coming Messiah from Isaiah's time. He's going to do what? Blot out our transgressions. I am he, Isaiah 48:12. I am the first and I am the last. What does that go to? That goes to an eternal existence. A self-created existence. Right? Nobody came before. Nobody's going to come after. So what's in the middle? I am is in the middle. So this wasn't just a one. This wasn't a throwaway line in Exodus 3. When he said his name meant something. And it was a declaration. All right, that's the Old Testament stuff. That's the fountainhead. That's what Jesus is connecting to when he makes these declarations. And the people he was talking to would have known it. When we go through John 8, the context of John 8 is he's talking to the Pharisees. Here's my take on the Pharisees. They weren't great lawyers, all right? I'm a lawyer, unfortunately. Could have been a pilot. That's a different story. So I'm a lawyer, right? Rule number one of lawyering, and this is who Jesus is talking to. He's talking to a bunch of lawyers who really don't like him and really want him to get in trouble and are too excited about it. They're too excited about it. Why? Because as you read through John 8, and I encourage you before through the summer to read through John, especially John 8, there's a lot of good of I am statements there and the absolutes. But they keep asking one too many questions. They keep asking the question that goes too far. Well, Jesus, aren't you just a demon? No, he's got a response for that. Well, Jesus, I'm going to present this adulterous woman. Aren't you going to condemn her? No. They always ask, they always push it one envelope too far. Why? Because their identity is in themselves. And I think that will become clear and evident as we study through this series, study through Jesus' response and his absolute authority. All right, so who had my John 8 since we clarified? All right, William. Would you kick it off for me?
The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets. Yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died, and the prophets died? Who do you make yourself out to be? Jesus answered, If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, He is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. So the Jews said to him, You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple.
All right. I've got goosebumps. I think that's a goosebump level passage when read right after Exodus 3. So we did Exodus 3:14. I am who I am. And then what does Jesus say? This is, and let's go back to context, right? Sometimes I get like too excited and go straight to like the meaning. But context here. Context in chapter 8 is that Jesus has been talking to the Pharisees for a while. They keep probing him. They keep testing him. They keep kind of trying to punch holes in his argument as to who he is. And in each attempt, each attack by the Pharisees, Jesus had to turn, right? He has something to turn them back to who his actual identity is. Starts naming and identifying his Father, right? From the very start, from the woman caught in adultery, starts writing in the dirt. You who are within, cast the first stone. Everyone leaves, except for who? Who doesn't leave? Who's the only person left there?
Woman.
And Jesus. The only person who's left there without sin who could condemn her refuses to condemn her. It's an identity point, right? Then we go to the eye and the light of the world, okay? They try to trip him up there. The truth will set you free. You and your father are the devil, he says to the Pharisees. A turn on them. Because if you knew my father, you'd love me. So who's he claiming to be? There's an opposite of the devil, and it's not any of us here. And then we get to the declaratory statement. So this is after a long testing. Some verbal dueling with these lawyers. Who, again, they could be better. There's some technical skills there they can do better on cross. Into that declaratory statement. Well, here's the preparatory statement. You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? The Pharisees are only contemplating Jesus in a temporal human condition. They're about to get messed up. I don't have a more articulate way to say that, because that's what happens to them. You're not 50 years old. You're like 30. You're a young carpenter dude. You're a dude out of Bethlehem. Who cares about you? Yeah, you've got a bit of a following, but do we really care? We can stone you now. We have the power. How could you know Abraham? My great, 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 however many great granddaddies knew Abraham, was Abraham. How could you know him? Everyone dies. And his response was, truly, truly, I say to you. And here's what I mentioned about the tense change. Exodus 3, two tenses. I am who I am. They're consistent for tense change. Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, past tense, in the human condition. Abraham was a human, right? Before Abraham was, because he was. Abraham lived, got the covenant, died, was collected, and his righteousness was accounted to him. Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. and he took the name. Not just took the name, declared the name, owned the name, spent the entire preceding chapter showing why the name fit him, and declared it in an absolute. I think whenever Jesus declares something, whenever Jesus speaks, we should pay attention. When he declares something like that, we should really pay attention. This was a direct claim of not just kinship, but concurrent existence in the Trinity with God. Right? Not just a son. He used the name. He's not God the second. He's not God Junior. He's not little God. Okay? Which, frankly, are all heresies that popped up out of this, right? I bring those up because people took that as something. They ran with it for a couple centuries. Well, maybe he's just like actually son. Maybe he's more like Apollo. Maybe this is more like a Greek myth. Maybe this is some type of special Gnostic knowledge connection with God. And Jesus achieved an enlightenment or something like that. No, he didn't say that. He didn't say, I found God. He didn't say, I found the island. He declared one thing. Two words. I am. So he owns that. Now he owns that identity. And there is a direct connection, right? Why was it in Isaiah? Because Isaiah foretold the coming of the Messiah. God used those words through Isaiah to declare that connection of identity. Now, Jesus didn't say here, too, and this will go back to application. Jesus didn't say, I'm a carpenter. He didn't say, I'm a prophet. He didn't say any of those things. He didn't say any of the worldly things that he had done. He didn't say, I'm a Jew. He didn't say, I'm from Samaria. He didn't say, I'm from Bethlehem. He didn't say, he didn't say my dad's God, but he didn't say my mom's married, right? He didn't say I'm of the line of David here as his identity. He just said, I am. His identity was not in the worldly things that he did. It was in a very clear and stark eternal identity, which should help us when we think about what is our identity. My foreshadowing for application, all right? Now, this is not his only declarative I am statement, all right? We're moving on a pretty good clip. I got 20 minutes left. I'll hit the foreshadowing for figurative and applications. But he uses other I ams. He compounds on this, okay? And I've got examples of them there. Mostly from John. You're going to find almost all, I think, if not all of these I am statements in John. But John 8:24, unless you believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. Now, here's a note on the I am he. I don't know Greek. But on the commentary I read about Greek, the statement actually is I am. And the he is added in as grammatical context in some translations, sometimes not in there. I think it's safe to say that you can take the I am he as the functional equivalent of the Hebrew, I am, right? We got some translation stuff, but I think it's safe to say that you can take those statements, the I am he's as the I am, right? So unless you believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. That tracks back to what he says to the Pharisees for the I am, right, that you're gonna live. Also goes, I am he who blots out your transgressions. Isaiah 43:25, written hundreds of years before. Okay. John 8:28, then you will know that I am he. John 13:19, so that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. John 18:5-6, Jesus said to them, I am he. And then I included their response there. They drew back and fell to the ground. That harkens back to what Moses did in Exodus 3. Remove your sandals. You are on holy ground. And Moses fell to his face in front of the burning bush. The presence of God. The divine God. And there's only one God. It's that God. Same God. Same God that had Moses falling on his face is Jesus. Who had his listeners, his followers, draw back at that statement and fall to the ground. John 8:58. Before Abraham was, I am. Right? These aren't figurative. Jesus isn't beating around the bush with these statements. This falls into the absolutes category. Right? There's the Old Testament I am. Those are absolute. Gosh dang, I am who I am. All right? Jesus ties directly back to it. I am who I am. And he's not shy about it. He proves it. He owns it. He knows it. He shows it. And he's worthy of that title. Not because of anything we give to him, but because it is his own self-evident, self-existent authority. We don't give him that authority. He doesn't rely on the Pharisees or his followers or his temporal power on the earth to make that statement. He's not a king when he says it. He's not an emperor when he says it. He's just a dude from Bethlehem. And yet, he claims and owns and deserves the title of I Am. So those are the absolutes, right? Where he's not beating around the bush at all as to who he is. Okay, that is his identity. Now, what I'm going to preview here is the figurative I ams. Okay? Well, there's a little more subtlety, but it reveals different parts of God's character. What is this identity of God and Jesus being the I am? What does it mean? What does it mean for us? And this is where I want to tie back real quick to Exodus 3 again. When God first approaches Moses, he identifies himself, not with his name, but through a relationship. Goes to Moses, says, God, or Moses, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The unique thing about those three is that they each had a relationship with God, right? He chosen them for relationship. That is how God first identifies himself to Moses there. It's not his name, but it's not his true authority, but it is how he relates to Moses. These figuratives, as I see it, are part of God's relationship with us, right? And I kind of want to contrast it with the rest of creation. God is not the door for your dog, right? So I'll go through these. One of them is, I am the door, right? Who's he a door for? Jesus is not a door for your dog. Just contrary to Hollywood's movies, not all dogs go to heaven, okay? Cats certainly don't. Sheep might, you know, they play a pretty big role, but no, I'm just kidding. Right? He's not the door for them. Mosquitoes, don't go to heaven, certainly. They might go to hell. It's a lake of fire, so I think there might be mosquitoes there. It's in keeping with eternal suffering. I got torn up by mosquitoes up in Colorado. Just torn up. Me and baby Paul. So, right? So the door, who's he talking about? What's he a door for? Sinners. Who is? Us. Right? I'm the bread. Dogs will eat anything, okay? But, like, lions don't eat bread. It's not the bread for the lion. That's not what he's talking about. I am the light of the world. Who needs the light? Owls don't. You see plenty fine in the dark. These are all in connection with his relationship to us, okay? Now, they are not defining, these aren't his name. We are not giving them him. Are giving these names and characteristics to him, Jesus is declaring it. The I Am is declaring it. He is declaring the relationship with us. All right? So I'll write a couple of these up here for you. Well, you got them on the notes. I don't need to write them up. All right? So we've got a number of them, and I wrote the ones we're going to talk about in the series down. So I am the bread. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. Those are figurative I am statements that Jesus gives about himself in relation to us. Right? So here's the
metaphors.
Now, what's that?
Metaphors.
Metaphors. Yeah. Right? Jesus uses a lot of, there's great things in language. Now, Carol, I had you on John 1. Here's one I want to go back to John 1. You could just do
John
1, 1 through, I think we can just go through 13.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and all things were created through him. And apart from him, not one thing was created that has been created. Life was in him, and that life was the light of men. That light shines in the darkness, yet the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man named John who was sent from God. He came as a witness to testify about the light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. The true light, who gives light to everyone, was come into the world. He was in the world, and the world was created through him. Yet the world did not recognize him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, he gave them the right to be children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God.
Thanks, Carol. All right. We have Jesus' own statement directly tying back with the I Am. John here is connecting the whole story back to Genesis. This is the whole story, right? So I include that because these and that's obviously figurative language to a degree, playing off of the Genesis story, the creation story, and God's work in creation. This figurative language works in the same way, and that's why it was used. Jesus is telling a story of his relationship with us. Since John starts that book telling a story of Jesus' relationship with the creation, right, and God's ultimate plan. So, what I'm excited for in this series is to find out more, just more about, you know, Jesus' words. I think it's really fun and encouraging and edifying to me to just hear the words of Jesus read. Two, see what it reveals about God's identity in relation to us. We don't get to put it on him. Be tough for us. We like to come up with identity things. We like to name things, create things, see things through, explore things. That's not for us here. We don't put a name on God. We don't put a characteristic on Jesus. We cannot define him. That's not our role. We can take, though, and ingest, and he wants us to know him. There's a deep desire for relationship here. So, exploring those parts. And then application. Let me move, as we've got the last few minutes here, to a couple points of application, just broadly, right? This isn't on each point. This isn't on each figurative thing. This is just on God's declaratory identity and how we fit in. One, the first application, I think I made it pretty obvious, but I do really want to be explicit, is that Jesus bears the same holiness, identity, and authority as his Father. Right? Exodus 3. John 8, same. Same, same, no difference. All right? There is no room in a two-word statement declaration for there to be a lot of nuance difference there. Okay? There's no difference. He claims the same and has the same. He's proven it. Two, only God can speak his own identity into existence. All right? We made that point clear at the start of the talk today, right? We don't do that. Moses didn't do it. Moses didn't do it. I'm sure not going to do it. All right? Moses approached with a humble heart. He approached God with a heart knowing where he sat in the ranking of the cosmos. And it wasn't up there with God. He asked humbly, with no authority, what should we call you? All right? I think that is an important lesson for our heart posture as we approach the God of the universe, right? I am not going to find under my own or anybody here special revelation, like special powers, something new about God. God tells it to us. There's nothing new I can invent for God. That ain't happening. So we come to him, we read his word, we approach him, we learn about him with a humble heart. That he can tell us who he is. Point number two. Point number three is about our own identities. Now, identity is, I put it here, an aspect, I think, of Imago Dei. We all yearn for an identity. You see the craziness in the world. A lot of it's tied up in identity. We all have our own things that make us think, you know, make us feel special, who we are. I got a ton of them, right? In the fall, it will certainly be Alabama football. Well, we like winning, so. unless it's to the Indiana Hoosiers, of all people. Right? It'll be Alabama football. I went to Alabama for law school. I love going to the games. I dress my kids up in the Alabama stuff, right? I love saying Roll Tide, especially when I don't know what else to say. You know, that's part of my identity. My husband, my father, Semper Fidelis. I'm a Marine and will always be a Marine, right? Like, that is a defining part of who I think I am. Okay, now there's another way to think of it, though. But I'll pause it for you. You can think on it. You got all summer to think on it. Those are just tasks. I didn't make myself a Marine. I didn't make myself a father. Didn't make myself a husband. I didn't make myself an Alabama fan. Nick Saban did. No, I'm just kidding. Those are tasks that we have in this world. And there's only kind of one paradigm for identity. You're the creator or you're a creation. You are either a creator, and there's only one of those, or a creation. And that our identity is aligned with, are we saved or are we not? Are we a creation that recognizes and has put our trust and faith in Jesus, or do we fall out of that? Eternally, there is no other identity that matters. You're not taking your titles with you to heaven, just like you're not taking your money or your house or your dog. Sorry. You're not taking those with you. But you do have an identity. You're not an automaton. None of us are. God gave you a special identity, part of his own image in bearing an identity. Sorry to pick on dogs. I do love dogs. But a dog's a dog. A dog is a golden, might be a golden retriever. It might be a very fluffy, special golden retriever. But it is still just a dog. It doesn't bear the identity. Golden retriever dog doesn't go to bed at night thinking, what is he? I'm a golden retriever. I'm a dog. So what I do? I fetch balls. Sometimes I give it back. Sometimes I don't. I go swim. I'm very cuddly. Sometimes too energetic. That's just what I am. We humans, since we've existed, I've wondered what we are. And we have an answer. We are created in the image of God, and we are his servants, to be redeemed by him at his will, under his authority. But outside of that identity, mother, father, Marie, Chair Force, Dave, it doesn't matter. It doesn't come with you. So, a self-assessment over the summer is, how much does your identity track with your eternal identity? And how much does it track with your worldly identity? And that's a tough question. I got to that point in studying for this, I was like, dang. I say Roll Tide a lot. I say Semper Fidelis a lot. How much do I say God bless you? It's a tough internal heart check. So that is what I would leave you with on application. I'm going to close this in prayer, unless anybody has some last thoughts that they just want to share with the group. Going once, twice, gone. All right. Please bow your head with me. Lord God, we come before you humbly, and we thank you for condescending to tell us who you are. That you are who you are, that you are the I am. And Lord, we thank you for sending your only begotten Son, the I am, to save us from our sins. Only you could do that, Lord. May you bless this summer series. May you bless the teachers who come and teach your word and who you are to this church, to this body of believers. May we come together and humbly take your word and learn about you. And Lord, may we also graft our identity to yours. May we focus on our eternal identity more and our temporal or our worldly identity less. God, thank you for this time. Thank you for the reading of your word. And thank you for your many blessings on us and this church. Amen.